All right, can you think of a better way to start a morning than talk real estate? No? I can. Read announcements. But don't get mad at me, it's just my job. I'm Michael Davis. I'll be introducing speakers throughout the weekend. Now, my first announcement, I should say, is the most important. Restrooms out that door and to the left. All right, so you know where those are. Just go to the end of the hall. And if you want to, if you've not found the bookstore yet, the bookstore, I love this sheet, it says around the corner. Which corner is an important question? Go out this door, go to the left, go to the end of that hall, and before you go into the hotel and rooms, there's the bookstore there. And you want to be there because later today, some of our speakers will be there where you can talk to them, ask questions, and buy product. Our presenters will be hanging out there. And also, you can have a cup of coffee, courtesy of the Woolwin family. Now, our sponsor lunches start today at 12:30, so look at your schedule to find the one that you need. Get a ticket for a free box lunch at that sponsor's table. Each has a limited number of tickets, so if they're out, there will be a concession stand outside the bookstore that you can, where you can grab lunch and attend. Check your revised schedule, please. We've added some Q&A sessions at 10:30. 2 and 4 with specific presenters. There's one on land trusts, LLCs, and taxes, shared housing, and creative deal structuring. So if you're having trouble or having questions with any of those items, you might want to attend. And then tonight we've got a presentation by some of our attendees about how they bought a deal with no money or credit. Nice kind of deal. That starts at 7:30, so if you're interested in creative deals, make sure to come to that. Also, make sure if you have to go out the door or come in, please don't let the door slam as much as you can. Also, check your cell phones right now. Turn off your ringers. Make them silent, please. All right. Out of curiosity, raise your hand if you've never done a partner deal. If you've never partnered with somebody on real estate, raise your hand. Right, about half the room. Have you never partnered with someone because you didn't know how? Have you never partnered with someone because maybe you were afraid? It's okay. Yeah. It's all right. Now, raise your hand if you would partner with someone if you knew that it would make you richer faster and you knew the right person and had the right documents.
Yeah, come on.
There you go. That's what he wants to see. Now, good, you're in the right room because that's what Dave Corsi is about to talk with you about. Now, Dave is a 30-year veteran of the real estate business.
40.
Wow, I'm going to have to get on Vina about that.
40.
40. We cheated you out of 10 years, Dave.
No.
He's done a lot of deals using equity sharing agreements, and that's a sophisticated form of partnering. He's the president of the Metro REIT in New Jersey. He's become more and more known around the country as a no BS creative real estate expert.
Really?
Now, I will tell you one thing. I just heard a rumor. I met Dave this morning. You don't need coffee in this session. Don't worry. Why? He's a no BS expert, and he's from Jersey, right? He's caffeine personified. With that, this is his first time at our conference. Please help me welcome Mr. Dave Corsi.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I want to really thank you for being here. I really appreciate that. What I normally do is I love when people ask questions. We're on a strict timeline here, so if I put you off at the end, even after we have to leave, I'll be happy to answer anything I can for you. But I just want you to know that if I put you off, please ask it later on. Okay? Now, let's go. Equity sharing in you, a match made in heaven. Does everybody have a handout?
Yes.
Okay. No? Okay. Can we get a couple of handouts up here? Thank you. Okay, we'll be pretty much following what's on the handout. Okay, here's some famous people. Sam Walton, Warren Buffett, J.P. Morgan, J.D. Rockefeller, Art Linkletter. Anything you can think of that they all have in common? What, Ed?
They're not as rich as me.
They're not as rich as Ed. They're trying to, but they haven't gotten there yet. Anything else?
They were JD partners.
They were?
JD partners with someone.
Exactly right. They've all been partners. Sam Walton, who was his partner? his employees. If you read his book, he said the best business move he ever made was when he did profit sharing with the people of Walmart. And he went in there not wanting to. I believe it was his wife who talked him into doing it after several years. He said it was the best move. It really propelled the company. Warren Buffett, what do we all know Warren Buffett for?
Him and Charlie Munger, investors.
Charlie Munger, okay. But what do we know them for?
Berkshire Hathaway.
How did Berkshire Hathaway start? Or even before that, his first investment vehicle, which he had closed up years later. But what did he do? Did he go out and borrow money to buy businesses? Because, by the way, everybody thinks of him as a stock picker, but really what Warren Buffett does is mostly buy businesses. His attitude, he's buying a business, not just buying stock. Long-term mentality, investor, not speculator, investor. But what did he do? Equity partners. He didn't borrow money to buy. He brought people in and said, if you invest with me, we will buy shares of stock, buy companies. He didn't want to take on debt financing. He wanted to take on people he was going to share equity with. And we all see the result of that, right? J.P. Morgan. Anybody know how those original companies like J.P. Morgan were set up? There's no limited liability. They were all partners. All the people with J.P. Morgan down on Wall Street, they were his partners. So they had to bring in business and do things. Their money was at risk, but they weren't using debt financing. They were using their own equity, pooling it together. J.D. Rockefeller, same thing with Standard Oil. Art Linkletter, how many of you guys who are under the age of 40 know who Art Linkletter is? Or don't know who Art Linkletter is? Everybody knows who he is? Cool. Okay, he was a very famous TV personality, host, etc. He used to do a show called Kids Do the Darndest Things and shows before that. The reason he's up there, Walt Disney opens Disneyland. He wanted Art Linkletter, who was the most popular personality for children in the country, to be the master of ceremonies in Anaheim, 1955. Walt Disney was financially strapped. He was pretty much broke at this point. Art Linkletter said he would do it. He made a deal with him. He would get 2% of all the film sold in Disney World for the next, say, 10 years. So instead of getting, say, a $25,000 fee, he made millions of dollars. Equity deal, right? He took a piece of the action. And that's what we're looking to do in real estate. Anybody ever watch HGTV? Okay. I'm usually kicked out of the room when it's on. I'm an active rehabber. And I physically do a lot of the rehab. When I get back home, I'll be finishing up one of my rehabs where I'm doing the molding, the carpentry, etc. These ladies have a show on called Unsellable Houses. I walk in, my wife's watching it. What do? They find somebody with a house that cannot sell. They say, we will put up the money to do the renovation on the house. We'll split the profit. Equity share. So equity sharing, it's a partnership where the parties involved agree to share in ownership, tax benefits, expenses, appreciation, amortization. How many of you have ever been to one of Pete's classes, Pete Fortunato? You've been there, right? Okay, if you've been there, Pete has his famous house with all the benefits, okay? That's what we're talking about. All these benefits you can be getting, and you can split them up and divide them. Ownership, of course, you might either be an equity partner as an investor, you might be a user of the property, okay? It goes both ways, very flexible. Tax benefits, they can be divvied up according to what each party needs. One person may need not tax shelter, but cash flow. They could get the cash flow. The other investor may be looking for a tax write-off. They could get the tax benefits. Expenses, again, if I have a user in the property, they're the ones who pretty much bear all the expense of the day-to-day. And once you buy a property, what is the thing that really gets you? The day-to-day expenses, correct? The repairs, the maintenance, the calls. Don't we all own homes where our own personal residence, where you're always putting money into it in some form or another, right? Now you're passing that on to the user, the person who will be living in the property. Appreciation, you're sharing into the appreciation. Amortization, you'll be getting the benefit of the amortization. Again, you can structure these to who needs what benefit. Property type, could be a single family house, could be a condo, commercial, land. In effect, it can literally be anything in real estate. The only thing I really don't think you'd be able to do it with technically might be a co-op. Like, I can't imagine people in New York City doing a co-op unless it's a family-related thing where they have the right to acquire the co-op. But generally, pretty much any kind of real estate you can think of that you can do equity sharing with. The market. What's going on right now? Is the market going to be softening, going to be getting stronger? What do you guys think? Softening, right? The newspapers are saying it. Powell's raising the interest rate, trying to slow down everything, which is a positive in the long run. It, quite frankly, I think for a lot of us, that's what we've been waiting for the market to soften. I know in New Jersey, where it's been very hot, and as soon as a property goes on the market, it's sold. One of our members had a house, $700,000 was the list price on it. Within 3 days, it had like 12 offers, and the highest one was $1.1 million on a $700,000 listing. It was insane. To me, it was like watching The Greater Fool Theory, and you knew that time was going to pass, and it is now passing. Think about it. Somebody in April could have afforded a $300,000 mortgage if they had about $1,300 in principal and interest payment they could make, because the rate was 3.25%. Right now, their purchasing power on that same amount, remember, what do they key off of? The $1,300 they can afford plus the $700 in taxes and insurance. We're from New Jersey, so the taxes are high. So they'll be at $2,000. They could afford a $2,000 a month payment. So $1,300 of that would be principal and interest. That same couple that could have afforded $300,000 can now only afford $190,000 based on the $1,300 payment. That's a 38% drop. That's going to have a huge impact on people. That's our opportunity, by the way. So we have rising interest rates, rising foreclosure filings, and I don't know where you are, but in New Jersey, we're noticing a very interesting phenomenon. The number of foreclosure filings are skyrocketing, yet very few properties are coming to sale. As Anthony could tell us, one of the reasons is they're all filing bankruptcy. That's the big thing in Jersey now. They're filing at the last minute. The play is to file bankruptcy. And the other thing, quite frankly, I think somewhere along the line, the government, it's an election year. So they're pushing it off. The secret is every year is an election year to a politician. So God only knows how long they're going to be able to push this off, but sooner or later, it will bear fruit for us. And of course, increased credit card debt. If you had been in Robin Thompson's meeting yesterday, she was mentioning the fact that there has been a big increase in consumer credit card debt. That gravy train sooner or later has to end as well. Equity share techniques can be used with just a straight purchase, an option, lease option, subject to, master leasing, shared equity loans, reverse mortgages. So you can see it's very, very flexible. You want to structure deals and look at all these techniques you can use it with. So it's not like you're limited, say, well, I can only do this if I'm doing a subject to deal. It could be any of these. Documents involved in an equity share transaction, contracts, a deed. We have a deal, we have one right now that we did with people. It's in an adult community where you need to be an owner. They no longer allow people to rent. We have a bunch of rental properties. And when they changed the rules, most investors said, well, I can't buy in there anymore. What we do is we will sell them 5% of the house. They are now an owner. We still own 95%. So we're doing a mini equity share deal with them. And then sometimes we'll, I don't want to get too complicated, we'll put with an estate for years, a life estate, something along those lines. But now we've followed their rules, they're an owner, We have 95% of the house. They have 5%. By the way, when I do the deed for that part of it, it will be their names and myself. So the three of us are down as the 5% owner. And then whatever entity we're using owns the other 95%. Okay. Okay. We have a house where we are not allowed to have, they're not allowed to be tenants in that location. What we do is we will sell them a small percentage of the property. Usually it will be an estate for years. In other words, they have 5 years. They will own 5% of that property for 5 years. At the end of 5 years, we have a buyout agreement with them where we'll give them back their money. These were people who were really thinking about renting and liked the area, loved the house, but they can't go in there because they're no longer allowed to as a tenant.
Why?
Because the rules of the association are no more tenants are allowed in the community. They banned tenants from being. We're grandfathered in on a lot of houses, so I can continue to rent those ones. But if I buy one in there now, I can no longer rent it. So I will sell them 5% of the house, keep 95%, and we all benefit. And I'll usually make it like a 5-year estate for years situation. Vina. Yes. Oh, good. They're the owner, right? Oh, okay, how am I making money? I'll get 10 minutes. On the other 95%, I've already got my numbers worked in, which you'll see in a minute on a deal we actually did there, where we are making it. In other words, I knew what I would be able to rent it for. Say I could rent it for $1,000. We'll keep the number simple. So I will 95% of the rent and then 5% ownership. So I'll get 95% of what the market rent would be in the area, and I've already done my math, I do my numbers, and I know I will have a positive cash flow. And then I have the uptake of 95% of the appreciation, and I can buy back the other 5 if they want. I don't want to be too complicated today, but I give them several different options, and I tell them whichever option works for you is fine with me. And let's say at the end of 5 years, they say, well, Dave, I don't want to go anywhere. They don't have to go anywhere. We extend it year by year. We're not looking to, you know. We generally hold properties a long time. Like Pete, we hold them forever. You know, people ask me, we've held mortgages for people, 50-year, 60-year mortgages we do with people, and a lot of people like, you don't have a balloon? No, I don't want a balloon. And then they look at me and go, do you really think you're going to be alive in 50 years? I've had people ask me. No, but I have kids and I have grandkids. And if I want my grandkids to think, you know, maybe he wasn't as wacky as we thought he was, it'll be when I'm in my grave, but finally, they'll understand what I did. Yes, sir. Anything. Yeah, the number is negotiable, whatever it works, but the key is to give it to them. And what will happen, if anybody goes down to the recorder's office, if one of those nosy people in the association go down, they're going to see that, yes, John and Mary Smith are owners of the property. All they look for is the name on the deed. They don't go through any of the paperwork. Pete taught me years ago, he goes, why don't you just record your whole option? Because we'd record memorandums. He told me, nobody's going to read it. He's right. They don't read it. They just say, oh, option. The property is now clouded. When we're using options, I don't want to confuse us, but I thought, yeah, it made sense. Nobody reads that stuff. Equity share candidates. Motivated home sellers, which is what we're coming into now, right? As this market softens, you are going to be having motivated sellers. Home buyers, young couples, retirees, people looking to step down a house. Incidentally, a lot of those step down people are looking to sell a house. In a soft market, you may end up selling them a house and buying their other house. And you can make the terms match or balance or what you need to do. Owners of vacant properties, investors, In a case of a divorce, what if you buy the husband's interest, he moved out, wife wants to stay there until the children graduate high school, so that would be 8 years, let's say. What if you buy out the husband's interest? Now you're an equity partner with the other spouse. Remember, equity sharing is pretty much, it's a partnership. It's just a little different take on it. Estate sales are very good for them. REOs. Now that one, of course, if you have a bank that's really motivated, and it better be a small bank, good luck. No, you're not going to have any luck with Bank of America. Try to get a human being on the phone at Bank of America. Equity share example one. Starter home, $275,000 to $325,000. They look at the $275,000 house, and it's okay, but they really like that $325,000 house. So they have champagne taste on a beer budget. They have $40,000 for a down payment. So that would be $33,000, plus we're going to say their closing costs are about $7,000 to equal $40,000. Taxes and insurance are $400 a month, and they qualify for a $2,100 PITI. Principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, by the way. Okay, let's do our cash flow. So they'll be borrowing $292,000 if they go to their friendly mortgage broker, correct? 30 years, 7%. The rate might be a little bit more now that Powell jumped it to 0.75%, but let's go with the 7. So, can you make that out? The payment comes to $1,942.68. We add in the $400. Remember, they're below the 20% down, so now they have to pay PMI. PMI of $131, $2,700 payment. What can they afford? What did they qualify at? $2,100, right? No go, they can't do the deal. So now they have to not settle for that house unless they have an investor. Somebody who has $32,000, that, by the way, that's, I think it's 33. I think my math was off by 1,000 there, but whatever. Oh, no, it's wrong on your paper. I'm sorry. I got it right here. I corrected it, but on the paper it's wrong. Obviously, what are the CDs paying at the bank right now for an investor? 1.5% or something, right? So for 50% of the future profit, they're thinking, well, gee whiz. I'll take the gamble. I'll shoot for that because I'm also getting tax benefits, et cetera, right? 50% depreciation, things like that. So they think, sure, I'll do that deal as an investor. Now, $260,000, 30 years, 7% comes to $1,729 plus the $400, no PMI. Payment comes into what they can roughly afford, $2,129. So now they can do that deal. What is the benefit to the young couple? Oh, let's do here. To be negotiated, negotiable. I don't know how I did that, but length of the agreement. How long is it going to play out for? If you have some people like, no, I want to do it quick. You know, I want only like a short-term 5-year deal. Then they either have to refinance, sell the property, etc. It all depends, again, on your investor's mentality. How many of you have sold houses over the years and you look back and go, boy, I wish I had that back? Oh, God, yeah. And that... You know, as you do that, you realize, I don't like to sell things. Like when it comes to how, I don't like to sell things that I know are going to go up in value in the long run. I won't buy a new car because literally I'm looking at it thinking it's going down in value every minute. I don't want that as my main asset. But I do want something that in the long run will go up in value, particularly if somebody else is paying those day-to-day expenses I was mentioning before. This young couple's right? They're living there. It's their house, their baby. Something breaks, the faucet breaks, they're not calling you up as the landlord, they are fixing it. You want to have spelled out the buyout and sale terms. Again, the length of time, if they can buy you out, you can buy them out, you're going to sell it to a third party. Great trick I learned years ago from Jimmy Napier. You know how everybody says, well, how do you determine the value of the property? What do you think? How would you determine the value if you're doing a buyout with the other party? BPO. I'm sorry. Comps, what else?
Appraisal,
the key word. Now, so one guy gets an appraisal, the other guy doesn't like the appraisal, so they bring in the third appraisal to do another one, like the mediator appraisal. Instead, Jimmy mentioned, what you do is you say to him, listen, one of us will set the price, the other will determine if they are buying or selling at that price. I thought, man, that's brilliant. Everybody has to be on the up and up. Because if you give me a real low price, I'll say, okay, I'll buy it from you. If you give me a too high price, I'll say, congratulations, I'm selling, you know, buying me out. So everybody's forced to be honest with one another, come with, together with a truly legitimate price. So one party will pick what the price is, one party will determine then who's buying who out at that price. So it works very, very well. Who's the amortization going to go to? Again, that investor, does he need any of the amortization? He's going to be getting 50% of the depreciation. And you work this out beforehand. You want to structure your deal and have all the stuff spelled out so there's no misunderstanding. By the way, use very simple contracts. There's nothing complex in here. What we usually do is a very simple contract, 1-2 pages, everything's big print. There's no fine print on the contract, we're buying the house, and then we may add an addendum explaining what the deal is. You know, I am buying selling you a 5% interest in this property, you will be renting the balance of the property from me, and you know, different things depending on what the deal is. That's what's important. Get the details right. As Pete always talks about, very simply, just explain what your deal is. Don't worry about, you know, putting it in lawyerese or legalese. You want to put it just as simple so the average person can understand it and not feel threatened. Now, I don't know in most states, but in New Jersey, every contract not written by an attorney has what they call a 3-day attorney review. I'm not sure if that's standard in the rest of the country. So when we're doing our contracts, they have to go through attorney review. So again, if my contract looks very non-threatening, they look at it, they're going to understand it, the lawyer looks at it, and you know, he may tell them he thinks it's a good deal, bad deal, whatever, but it's very easy to understand. Okay, let's look at what people are getting and giving up. The benefits for the user, the person, that young couple living in the property. They're going to get the preferred home, right? They're in the $325,000 house, not the $275,000 house. They have the affordable payment. They could afford the $2,100 without struggling. They got that. They've got shelter. Very important. It's what I always liked about real estate. Other industries always made me nervous. You know, when you go by in the mall and you see somebody who opened up an exotic handbag store, and I used to go by there thinking, but what if nobody wants their exotic handbags, right? The two things you need are food and shelter, right? That's why I like them. And tax benefits, they are getting to write off the interest payment, right, on the mortgage. Give up, and property taxes, by the way, they're getting as well. What they're giving up is a portion of the future profit, that 50% we were talking about. Champagne taste, beer budget, right? They were able to keep that because of that. Any questions on this? This was a real simple one. We're going to get to one a little more complex in a minute. Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
What is the remedy if they default?
What is the remedy if they default on the loan? Okay. In this case, I want to have access. Usually they'll set up the bank pay it online. I want to have access to look there and make sure they're paying it. The remedy would be for me, almost like a junior lien holder, if I wanted to make the payments current. Now, I think a lot of you would have a big advantage over what we have in New Jersey. I would have to formally foreclose on them in New Jersey. Now, has anybody have any idea how long it takes to foreclose in New Jersey? Guesses. 2 years?
Five, four.
Roughly between 3 and 4 years. Ask me how I know. It's painful, especially when we have the highest property taxes in the country. Paying that. paying insurance, paying if there's association dues and things like that. Thankfully, we've only had a few. But yeah, it takes a long time. I really envy you guys. So when I hear, 6 months, we're like, oh God, I would give my right arm for that. But it takes a long time. But you would have to do a formal foreclosure. And that's why, again, I want to know about these people. My biggest thing when I'm dealing with somebody is I want to know the character of the people I'm dealing with. I want somebody who is serious, who really wants it, and has a good work ethic. How did we get in trouble in 2007, 2006? They were giving loans to people who had poor credit, bad job history, and were putting 3% down. Gee, what could go wrong? And if you remember, what the expert said was, well, the nation has a 1% default rate. Yeah, that was with people with good job, good credit, and 20% down. You think it was going to happen the same with people with bad credit, weak job history? It's not going to happen. And we all saw the result. Yes, sir?
So instead of foreclosing,
we would foreclose. We would have to. We'd have to do it. According to New Jersey law, too, the judges have made it more and more, any kind, even on lease options. A lot of judges in Jersey are saying they have an equitable interest. You will have to foreclose on their equitable interest back to 3 or 4 years. That's why we are very careful. I've been very fortunate, even with my tenants. I am never in the landlord tenant court because we screen them really hard. Our application is 7 pages. I want to screen out the guy who's looking at that going, there's no way I'm filling this out if I'm the kind of guy who's looking to beat somebody. So, yes, sir.
Wouldn't you be able to use some sort of resignation clause in your contract to make default?
No. You could put it in there. Judge will quickly blow it out. Yes. By the way, the question was, can I put a clause in there stating that if they don't pay, title will revert back to us. Those days are gone. Long gone. Yes, sir.
Going back to the loan and lending them the $32,000, how does the bank look at that? Are you now a good borrower? Are you lending to them? Or they, how
well, that's a great question. Am I a co-lender or am I a borrower? Depends on the bank. You know, usually sit down with the mortgage broker and say, okay, how do you want to structure this? How should it be structured? For instance, when we do a lease option with people and they go to exercise their option, by the way, I'd say 95% of the people we do an lease option with buy the property. I want them to buy the property. I'm not doing it trying to beat or hurt them. I want them to benefit. I want it to be a good deal for them as well. And we tell them, when time comes, we will sit down with your mortgage person and ask them, do they want it credited towards a purchase price? Will they credit it towards a down payment? We are flexible. Whatever option consideration you gave us that you're getting credit for, we will structure it however it needs to be done to benefit them. Yes, sir?
Are the buyers then ones listed on the deed or whatever?
Oh, yeah, sure. So it would be some kind of joint venture type thing on the deed. It would be John and Mary Smith, and my company probably, my main company is a company called Peace of Mind Management Corp. And Peace of Mind, or generally, if we can, again, a bank's involved, so we won't be able to use a trust. Anything we buy without that is in a trust. Mike, did you have a question?
Yeah, just to be clear, you said you're going on title, or are you taking a second back?
Well, remember I said before how you could use different forms? I wasn't going to go too deep into that, but right, you may not go on to title. You may just take out a mortgage and be a mortgage holder on an equity participation note, doing the same exact thing. That's a great point, Mike. In other words, you might use a note, you might use an option, you could use a lease. That's what I was talking about before when I was trying to show all those different forms of doing it, the paperwork, depending on what you're trying to structure. Any of those could give you the right of equity participation. Now, if I'm taking the note, I would not be getting the tax benefit, correct? Everybody see that? Because I'm not technically an owner. But in effect, I would be getting 50% of the future, in this case, I would be getting 50% of the future profit. And the lender will have to allow. Certain lenders are very leery about people holding second mortgages. So we need to know who will allow it. And that always struck me as strange, by the way. If I'm acting as a buffer, If I have $33,000 in that and I'm acting as the buffer, if I'm a banker, I'm thinking, cool, there's somebody behind me that if they get in trouble, he's going to come in and protect our interest. For years, I've been going to Washington trying to talk to them about installment sale rules. That is, again, don't even get me going on a tax code. It'll be an all-day thing. But the point is that under right now, if you're a dealer and you're holding mortgages for people, playing the bank, you have to pay tax in the year of sale even though you haven't received the money, which is totally illogical. They would make more money. I've been since 1992 meeting with Congress people about this. And I'm hoping maybe in November, this week, if there's some kind of change, a miracle of God, that will get people in there who you can go talk to and go, yeah, that makes sense. Actually, they had it in the House Ways and Means Committee, and they did, the CBO does an analysis. They want to make sure that if we do it the way I mentioned, pay the tax as we receive the money, right? Logical? They would make more money. The CBO did a study on it, and they called me back, and they said, we're shocked. Because they say everybody always says the way they're telling them to do something will bring them more money. The woman from Charles Rangel's office, who was the Ways and Means Committee chairman at the time, said, we're shocked. I actually came back and said, you're right. I thought it was a no-brainer. Then we're in. Next thing I knew, Dodd-Frank came in. And they were saying, you can't even do any seller financing. And then certain gentlemen in the room had a great idea, told us, well, stick AARP on them. Great idea. So if we called AARP and they kind of sick because you got Ma and Pa in Texas who own three rental properties who when they retire wanted to sell them and hold paper. And you're telling them they can't do that. Congress listens to AARP, I guess. Thank you for that, by the way. you know, there's many ways to do that. Now, for the investor, the benefit, future profit, tax write-offs, tax benefits. Imagine if this deal was done in their IRA, with IRA money, right? It's going to go tax-free if it's in a Roth IRA. And what they've given up, earning a whole $160 on their $33,000 sitting in a bank account. I think that's a good trade-off. Okay, this is number two. This one gets much more interesting. I wanted to give you a real basic bread and butter one for the original. Now I want to kind of go to the other side, and there's all kinds of areas in between. A motivated seller, they inherited a vacant house that's about 500 miles away from where they live. Man, everything is going right for us as investors. As the market's declining, they live 500 miles away. They had just watched the movie Pacific Heights, and they said, there is no way we are going to be landlords. Great movie to show to people who are nervous about landlording. Show them Pacific Heights. Fair market after renovations will be $250,000. In its current condition, $200,000. It's listed at $210,000 and it just expired. Again, remember, house is vacant. Current market value of the two, fix up and holding would be 25, so the total would be 225. By the way, I apologize for this going off. I had to convert this late last night to PowerPoint from Google, and some of it kind of got screwed up. And thank God for Sarah, because she fixed a lot of it for me. Okay, negative cash flow each month would be between $1,200 and $1,400, because there's a mortgage on that property, which you'll see in a minute. Now, you offer to take it as is. You're taking subject to. Does everybody know what subject to is? Great. No? I see a couple. Okay. Subject to is where an original owner borrowed the money from the bank. Now, they're looking to move on, and they go to sell the house. Someone comes in and says, listen, I will take the property. I want to take over your mortgage payment. Subject to, it's not assuming. Assuming is where you sign on it and now you have personal liability. If you take it subject to, you have no personal liability, excuse me, you better darn make sure you make those payments. You promise those people you will make those payments. You've got to make those payments for them. They have to like and trust you. To get subject twos, you really need to plan on spending time with people, getting them to know and trust you, and show them other things you've done. Build up a rapport, show them a record. When we do it, we tell people, please go talk to our tenants, talk to people we've done these deals with before. Your credibility goes way up when you do that. And you show them that you do what you say you're going to do. I cannot stress that enough. So you're going to give the seller $15,000 in cash and close in 5 days. Liens and encumbrances. This is back to the subject two. First mortgage was taken out $160,000 for 30 years at 4.25%. Remaining balance on the loan is $145,292. That's about 5 years. It's been amortizing for approximately 5 years. So we're at $145,292, taxes and insurance, the $400. Our total payment is about $1,187. That's the current mortgage on the house. It was taken out in November. This is a repeat of what we just said because I want to make sure this is really getting in there. So our payment's $1,187. The remaining balance, once again, $145,292. Your note in negotiation, the terms you agreed to, take subject to, and $15,000 in cash. So the cash outlay for me is $15,000. Young couple, contractor. You then turn around, and by the way, so your offer is accepted because, again, it's vacant. They're 500 miles away, declining market. The realtors haven't gotten a house sold for them, so they are motivated. You sell it to a young couple. They have $25,000 saved up to buy a home. $210,000 sale price. $10,000 down payment. Leaving $15,000 for the rehab. $200,000 seller held mortgage at 6% interest only. Remember, the husband is a contractor. I do think I'm missing a slide in here, though. Let me see before. Yeah, I think we are. On your paper, look, how much did I, when I made that offer to the seller, how much did the deal go for? What was the sales price? It's on that paper.
210.
No, not 210. 160. The 142 plus the 15. I apologize. Somewhere along the line, a slide got lost. So that might be confusing you. So it would be 142, roughly, right? The remaining balance plus $15,000, right? That would be the purchase. Now, remember, he couldn't sell it at 210. They were saying roughly it's worth two, but the market is soft, wanted to sell. He's running a negative cash flow every month. He now no longer will have a realtor to pay. So at 5%, you're taking off another about $10,000. So our number's getting closer, right? 142 plus the 15. I'm getting to a point where he'll say he'll do the deal because he says, gee, if this house sits for another 6 months, at the $1,400 a month negative cash flow, better selling it to Dave now and getting it sold. Does everybody see that? I apologize for that missing slide, but I want you to understand that because otherwise you'll be like, what the heck is he talking about? Okay, everybody got it? Equity share deal. The user's monthly payment. I bring the young couple, the contractor in. He is going to fix it up. $200,000 at 6% interest only, $1,000 a month. Monthly cash flow. The user is going to pay $1,000, and we're wrapping the mortgage, by the way. I will be paying the underline. Do you guys remember how much the payment was on that original 160 at 4.25? $787, right? And that's on an amortizing loan. My interest-only loan, because it's a higher amount we're selling it for than what's on the mortgage, is $1,000. So I'm making a positive cash flow. Everybody see that? About $212. 10 years later, we go to sell the house to a new buyer. The contractor, they're moving on. By the way, remember the $25,000? Okay. He gave me 10. Why did he? He had 25. He gave me 10. But what's going on with the other 15? He's using it to rehab the house, right? Make it worth more in value, which increases my value in the property as well. I want him to fix up the house. I want him to have money. I want him to have affordable payments. So at 3% a year, I'm always very conservative with my appreciation number. So 3% a year, let's go with. Sales price ends up 10 years later of $337,000. Remaining balance on the original mortgage, remember, started at 160, 4.25, $787 payment. What's the remaining balance? $76,837. Final sales result, $337 minus $250, minus $20,000, which would be our closing cost, equals $87,338. The result, the young couple on their end will be receiving $10,000 for their initial down, from their initial down payment. They get their down payment back. They'll get back their $15,000 for the rehab. Now, the profit of $87,338, by the way, another couple slides somehow got lost in here. The deal was we would keep 25% of the future appreciation. They would get 75%. We get 25%. So they'll get 75% of that, so they ended up with $65,000. So at the closing, they will get $90,503. And the house they were able to live in, that had a very affordable payment for them. The investor receives 25% of that 87,000, so 21,008. Remember, $250,000. Anything over and above the $250,000. Now, remaining balance of $76,837, $173,000. Any questions so far? I hope I'm not confusing everybody. Yes, sir.
Are there any issues with financing owner-occupied properties?
Well, this is an owner. Remember, it took subject to the loan. Because I took subject to the loan, now, the bank, in theory, can call the loan due. Will they? Doubtful. A, people are, they're going to have enough trouble with people who are not making their payments, rising foreclosure rates, as opposed to somebody who is making the payment. And a lot of times now, we can do it, what, you can pay electronically? So they will not even see a check from Peace of Mind Management Corp coming in the mail. They'll just see every month a computer thing. No, loan was paid. Loan was paid. By the way, they know Peace of Mind Management as the company that will now be managing the property. If they ever want to go down to the courthouse and see the deed, well, they see it. The key there is to make sure that your insurance is properly shows. And I tell them, Peace of Mind manages a lot of property. We have a blanket mortgage insurance policies, and we send them the one for their property showing that we have the proper insurance coverage for them. And again, it's all computerized and all that. They're just happy. Proof that there is insurance on the property. So they will not be shorted if anything happened to the property. Yes?
I didn't mean that. I meant as far as Dodd Frank goes. You're loaning that money to
Oh. Well, again, I want to make sure that they are qualified. Good point. You want to make sure anybody you put in any of these deals meets those needs, like that young couple in the first one. They were going for mortgage, so now they were qualified by a licensed mortgage loan originator. I ended up getting my license because of Dodd-Frank, a mortgage license, because according to the law, you could only do 3 a year right now, and that's part of the law they're trying to change. The loophole is if you have a mortgage loan originator license, you can do an unlimited amount. So I went and got the darn license for what it's worth.
You could also use a license for originator.
Thanks, Michael. The other thing is you can just go and have a person who is licensed qualify them. And what they're going to be looking for, yes, do these people do qualify? And a lot of times they'll do it for nothing because they're thinking in a few years maybe I can get a mortgage from a loan from them. you know, I'll get business from them, or they'll have family members they'll refer to me.
Or it's like $500.
Yeah, or you pay them, right? Or you could pay them $500 to qualify them. In either case, you can get done, but yeah, it's a great point. You do want to make sure that they are qualified. And it's also for your benefit. Who the heck would want to put somebody in a house they can't afford? I just don't see the logic of that. So that's the rehab and down payment. So we receive $195,545. Now, why, is anybody thinking, wait a minute, why is our number so high? One of the slides that was missing showed that we were splitting, they were getting 75% over everything over the 250. We're getting 25% of everything over the 250, right? But we have an amortizing underlying loan. We're getting an interest-only payment. That loan is amortizing every month, right? For 10 years, 120 months, that loan went down. I think that might be the next slide here. Let's see. Okay, let's go to this one. Investor's yield, assuming 122 months. Well, no, you know what? Let's not do this one right now. First, let's go back there. So I have a loan, $200,000, interest only, never changed. Right? I have an underlying loan going down every month. I'm the one picking up all that equity each month on that amortization. Any questions on that? Because that's where the real juicy part for an investor on this deal is. Sir?
Can you repeat what you just said?
Sure. I have the deal is 250, which is on your paper, $250,000. They get 75% of anything over that 250. Then the house now, once fixed up, is worth 250. I'll get 25% of everything over 250. However, so I'm entitled to 250, the first 250. I have to pay off that existing first, which has been amortizing every month. It is now down to $76,000. So 250 minus the 76. Then I've been getting $212.90 for 120 months, right? The $1,000 minus the 787. If anything breaks, who fixes it?
They do.
Now, if in part of the deal, we may have, if they have to replace an air conditioning system, heat system, what I do is they would pay for it, but we would prorate it toward, at the back end if we have to. If they put on a $10,000 roof, I'll say, okay, 20-year roof, so $2,000 a year will be prorated. So at the end of that, if we sold it at 10 years, they would also have credit for that. So they'd get $5,000 credit for the part of the roof that they used while they lived there. You know, that way it's fair to them, and it also makes them want to maintain the property and not let things slide. Yes?
So on your sheet here, it says the result of the young couple go from a $1,500 rent payment down to a $1,400 mortgage payment.
Right.
There, you're claiming the actual mortgage payment, right? The $173,000. They're not really paying a mortgage, they're paying rent.
No. Remember, they're an equity partner. They're on a deed.
Well, what part of the principal payment do they get?
None. Remember, it's interest only. They have an interest only loan. That's why. But the point was, again, there's more detail. That's why I want to make sure you guys had the handouts. There's more detail on this because I knew I had time limitation here today. But they were paying $1,500 in an apartment, as you'll see on that sheet. Now they're down to living in a house. $1,400. Their payment went down $100 a month, their living expenses. Is that a good deal for them? I think so, and I'll tell you, I've done it as the buyer and I've done it as the seller. It's good for everybody. When you do a deal, my attitude is, learned this from Pete years ago. First off, what's the benefits to everybody? I want, when I go into a negotiation, I never think I'm here to beat somebody up. I'm here to determine how does everybody in this deal benefit. What will make it where everybody comes out and says, that was a good deal. We all made out. That's what I want. Whenever we've done an equity share deal, everybody has benefited. We've never had a problem where anybody came out and said, boy, I feel cheated. Yes, sir.
You, at one point in the presentation, you mentioned IRAs or Roth IRAs. How do you avoid doing business in your IRA with...
Oh, that's a whole nother story. I would talk to some of the IRA guys. I don't even want to touch it. I know how we do it, but try to keep an arm's length, shall we say? And maybe in that case, a lot of times with the IRA, you want to hold a note. Hold a note. In other words, you're holding a mortgage. You know, a lot of these guys can tell you about that. But by doing it that way, as a void, like I remember Pete always telling me, don't hold real estate. And a lot of people do it, but I agreed. I don't like the idea of holding a house in an IRA. I'm too afraid that they're going to come after, you know, so for what it's worth. Any question, other questions right now? Okay, so we ended up with $195,545 on a property which we didn't have to babysit. I'm big on not babysitting property. For instance, even on our rentals, when I sit down with them, I go over the lease, I read it word for word, and our lease is pretty tough. But we tell them the reason it's tough is we respect you and treat you as an adult. We don't babysit property. You will not hear from me. You will not see me coming around to say, by the way, whose car was in the driveway? That's not the license plate on your application. There are landlords who do that. I'm thinking, don't you have anything else to do? I don't want to be bothering my tenants. I only want to know if they have a problem. And I have a really good relationship with our tenants. But I don't want to babysit. And they respect that. I said, that's why that's in there. And then as I go through the thing, I tell them, some of this stuff is going to look really strange to you. I said, and for every strange thing in there, I have a story, and I'll be happy to tell it to you. And, you know, they laugh and we laugh, and some of the stories I'll go through telling them, they go, okay, now I understand why you have it in there. You know, and like I said, we very rarely, I haven't been in landlord-tenant court unless I was buying a property trying to get somebody out. Probably 12 years. You know, so... It's all the way you structure, conduct, and again, the people you're dealing with. So now, what has been involved in this deal? Subject two, remember at the very beginning I said what kind of deals you can do? Subject two, took subject to a mortgage. That's where the value in this property was. The fact that we were able to take over a mortgage with a really good interest rate. I remember, about a month ago, Vina got all excited because she just told me that she had just taken her first subject to in this whole new real estate world. What was it, 3%?
2.75.
There you go. She wanted to dance a jig. God bless her, right? I mean, think about it. That's the opportunity that's going to be here if you're willing to look and be creative. Okay? So, the value is, I was in this deal, take over 3.25% mortgage. While everybody's going to a banker now trying to get, I hope I get 6.5. They're at 3.25. But you have to keep your promise to the seller and make sure you make that payment. Now, conversely, what if, it's not on here, but let's turn around a little bit. How about if I say that would make a really good rental property and the owner's 500 miles away, but he doesn't know about that subject to bit. How about they become the equity partner and we rent the property out and I manage the property because they're 500 miles away. Now the deal would be structured differently, but kind of the same thing almost, right? We'll say, tell you what, we'll set the property at $200,000. I will do the rehab, and we will split the profit, and we will split the amortization. Isn't that still a fantastic deal? But now he's like, okay, I don't know you, Dave, so I don't trust you, but if I'm still the one holding the mortgage, and you're making the payment every month, and I can see it right on there that that payment's been made, that property's being maintained, etc., who wouldn't do that? Would you guys do that if you live 500 miles away and you had a vacant property that's sucking $1,400 a month out of your account every month? $1,400 coming off whatever equity you have in that house? And I came to and said, hey, how about, here's my proposal. I will maintain, manage a property. Isn't this similar when Dave Tilney talks about master leasing? And the little niche on it is the fact that now you have a piece of the ownership. And you can do that with an option, you can do that with a no equity share, no, all different ways to do it depending on the deal, the people involved. Okay, Wraparound mortgage, right? I wrapped it. I did $200,000, 6% interest only. I wrapped that underlying amortizing note with an interest-only note. That gave me the $212 a month positive cash flow. The deed with ownership interest defined, so we will have that right in the deed. So now the title is clouded in the way that nobody can come in and say, well, wait a minute, you know, you had an agreement, but it was never recorded or anything. It's right in the deed. Anybody goes to buy that house, they're going to see all that, you know, whatever interest in that property, it's right in that deed. They are the owners. The right people involved, remember, the guy was a contractor. The property needed work. So brought him in, and I knew his work. He might have been doing work for me before this. I know his work, okay? I know he does good work, and I know he's going to pay me because he does a lot of work for me. And again, the idea that we're long-term. My main partner, we've been partners for over 30 years because we both have the same mentality, long-term. We never think short-term. We think long-term, and he's much older than me. So, can I do? But he still thinks long term. That's why it's worked so well over the years for us. And understanding finance, knowing how to work that financial calculator, do the numbers and say, okay, this deal will work, and here's how it'll work for you, here's how it'll work for me. I have found the best deals we've ever done were with people who had some financial sophistication. Didn't have to be a whiz on a financial calculator, but they understood finance to a certain extent because they could understand, oh, I see what the benefit for you is, and I know what the benefit for me is. Let's do the deal. The ones who are always scared are the people who don't understand this kind of thing and think, well, this sounds too good to be true, or somebody's trying to pull the wool over me or something like that. So I've always found it easier dealing with people who understand the benefits all the way around. And that's why when you do these deals, you have to be willing to spend time with people and have an interest in them. Pete, first question he asks when he goes in the house, why are you selling a nice house like this? Great question. You know, now you get to open up. It's not a yes or no. It's why are you doing it? Okay, well, I got transferred to Wisconsin. I have to leave in 2 weeks, and the realtor didn't get the household. Voila, there's opportunity. Now, the investor's yield. Assume it was 122 months, that 120-month 10-year period. Let's say there were 2 months involved in selling the property to a young couple, or you may have even given him a couple months to get the house up and running before he had to make his first payment to you. So your yield by the time all is said and done is about 36%. Not bad for property that you have to just sit on. And remember, we factored the appreciation at 3%. Heck, even if it didn't go up, it went zero. Still going to be a pretty good deal for you, right? And how about, historically, what is appreciation? Anybody know? About 4 or 5%, right? Pretty much.
36 a year.
I'm sorry.
It's 36%.
Annual. That would be annual. Your rate of return is based on 36%. Because remember, now, by the way, you only have $5,000 invested, right? Not 15. Why?
Because they got 10.
You got 10 back, right? He gave you 10. You want him to have some skin in the game. And everybody made out on this deal. This is, by the way, it's a real deal. Okay, to learn more, you know, a perfect opportunity is brewing for this kind of thing. I'm going to be doing the RMG workshop on Saturday, November 12th, where we're going to all day talk about this, and we're going to get much more detail, paperwork, clauses that we use in these agreements, etc. All of you, I guess, a lot of you belong to either Cincinnati, Corey, whatever, and the rest of us around the country who are members of RIAs or RMG, etc., you know, sign up with your group. And pretty much, any questions? I guess I'm doing pretty good on time. Great. Yes?
How long do your people generally stay in the home?
My average tenant stays with me at least 15 years. These deals, same. I don't have any hard. I'll be honest. I usually lose a tenant when they either pass away or go in a nursing home. I'm serious. That's when they leave. And when people move in and they ask me, well, how long, I love when a person asks me, how long do you plan on having this house? Because I know they're worried that I'm going to sell it a year from now. I'm looking for the person who wants to stay a long time. I said, well, I don't know, 30, 40 years. Same thing, like I said before, about when I hold paper for people, we will hold 40, I think our longest one is a 55-year mortgage. I wanted the payment to be affordable for them. And by the way, in New Jersey, I am not supposed to do an interest-only loan. So what I might do on a deal like this, if I'm worried that they'll say, wait a minute, interest-only loan, can't do it, okay, make it a 75, 80-year amortization. There's always a way around things, and you just have to find out what the rules are in your neck of the woods and do it.
Yeah. I love you, ma'am, but that was the worst sales pitch in history.
I'm sorry. As you can tell.
I don't think he properly explained what he has to offer here. There's a QR code in the back of your account. You scan that and go to that page. He's doing an all-day seminar on this for $47. And he has all these wonderful handouts about how to screen your potential partners, homeowners. He's got some actual documents that he's used for these things. But good luck getting your lawyer to understand this and figure it out. You take the documents to your lawyer and say, this is what I want to do, just make it legal for where I live, okay? And he has no courses to sell. It is $47.
That's it.
All day education. Y'all should be scanning that code and signing up for it, because it's going to rock, and it's a week from tomorrow. And if you can't on Zoom, if you can't attend live, we're recording the whole thing, and you will get the recordings along with the documents on Monday, on the following Monday. So if this is interesting to you, why would you not spend $47? $47. All right, come on.
Thank you. Sorry. Mike.
Earlier you mentioned about the adult community and the 5%.
Yes.
Keeping 95%. What concerns do you have about going on title with something like that?
I don't have much, because again, I've screened them pretty well. I make sure they easily qualify. Like, they can easily make that payment every month. And one of the reasons many, many years ago we started buying a lot of homes in adult communities, because I realized those are the tenants I like. No wild parties. You know, you'll get the call that to come over because something that your average tenant can do, they can't. I'm fine doing that. Builds rapport, and by the way, word of mouth. When we have a vacancy, I really don't have to advertise it. I have tenants who all the time, Dave, if you have anything open, my sister-in-law wants to move. You know, and it really haven't had a problem. We're pretty strict. And in New Jersey, for instance, you have to accept Section 8. I know other states you don't. New Jersey, by law, it's considered income, and that's called discrimination of income. If you say, no, I will not participate in Section 8, they do have testers who will call you to see if you say the wrong thing, like, no, we don't take Section 8. So we take Section 8. But you're allowed to have standards. Our standards are pretty high. And because of that, I only have two people on it right now. One of them just went on it after being my tenant for almost about 30 years. Wow. But the ones I've had have been good. And I have to say, I've learned, especially in New Jersey, not all Section 8 offices are created equal. Some are pretty tough, and other ones, if you can fog a mirror, they'll put you on the program. I look for the areas that you cannot fog the mirror. You have to, you know, have people who are real people and working and doing something. And those folks have been great, quite frankly. Sir? Yeah?
Why not just do a lease option? Why
would all
this?
Okay. I want somebody, again, who has an ownership mentality. Oh, why do I not just do lease option as opposed to equity sharing? Several reasons. Again, because we have a long-term mentality, I want somebody who's an owner, who really feels like an owner. Now, we might do a lease option with them and turn it into an equity share if we want to test it out, or if they're not sure what their situation would be, we say, gee, they really make a good tenant. and maybe give them the option to buy a 50% interest, or whatever the terms might be. Remember, I said before, it's very flexible. I happen to like it. How many of you would rather do an equity share deal as a person living there than a lease option? I would. You know, because now I know I'm on it, because you're always concerned, too, that there's somebody out there who's trying to cheat somebody with a lease option. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of people in the real estate industry who have used lease options to really kind of screw people. Yeah. And that created a real problem, I know, about 10, 12 years ago. So, 10? All right, Vina? Oh, question. I'm sorry, I thought you'd give me time. That's not yours. Okay. Absolutely. Right. It's a win-win for everybody involved, and that's the important thing. Ma'am. Yeah.
So, can I use this to lend money to a rehabber?
Sure.
Part of the,
but now this is going to be a flip situation. I'm assuming a rehabber who's going to flip the property?
Right.
Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. You're in effect, instead of just doing a hard money loan, you may do a thing where you are the equity partner. For instance, has anybody taken Dyke's hard money course? Okay, great course, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I mentioned to him, because I'm thinking in Jersey, okay, instead of doing hard money per se, what either do an equity share with it, or I buy the property, I give him an option. He'll do the work, do what he's supposed to. He'll have an option to buy it from me at the same thing as the hard money loan. The reason I would be looking to do that is because 4 years to foreclose in New Jersey. So by doing that, I am the owner. He screws up, I'm the owner, which I want to do. But absolutely, and the reason I'm mentioning it now, you may, if you're not sure about them, do something similar like that. And it may not be an option. You may still retain a 50% interest in the future appreciation, or you may decide, gee, this would be a good property to hold. So you buy it afterward because he's a flipper, but you're an investor looking to hold the property. So that can work for you as well. See, the key here is there's no cookie cutter, guys. You have to look at each deal and say, okay, how do I take this deal? How do I structure something that everybody will benefit? They get out of it what they need. And everybody goes on, and then word of mouth. People hear about you, and you do more deals. Now, during the last couple of years, quite frankly, we've only bought a couple houses. We've been waiting for what's about to happen. That's opportunity time. And then now we'll be, I'm planning on doing a lot more of these as time goes on. Yes, ma'am.
I feel like there is the anti-sentiment. The government and people with the lease option,
right?
It's an anti thing. So this is solution for that, because now they are entitled.
They're an owner.
They're not, so we're not, it's like we're not taking advantage of them, because we're not saying, oh yeah, you can buy this house, you know, and
absolutely
actually do the deal, and that's,
right.
And that's where I think we're getting in trouble, getting a bad reputation for that.
Exactly.
I think that's what
right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Now, think about it. What is the oldest known equity share deal you can think of, or the most common? Mom, dad, and kids. Mom and dad put up the money, kids move in, and when they sell the house, they split the profit. And the kids don't mind. Why? Because they know when mom and dad die, it's coming back to them. Right? That's an equity share deal. These are all, everybody does so many things, and they're all equity share deals. So there's all that opportunity. Questions? Apparently we're doing really good on time. I had no idea how long I would go on this, but did I explain it clearly enough? I really hope I did. Sir? Yes?
Just a question about the numbers. The 250 threshold, you sold it to the buyer.
Because the benefit to him was the fact that I was willing to do that for him. It could have been at 200. The question was, and it's a great question, by the way, why did the price set at 250? Because 250 would have been the market value, remember? And he's putting in his sweat equity and his $15,000 to fix it up. But he knows he'll be getting that money back. He'll be getting to live there. He's getting $100, paying $100 less than he would as a renter and now as an owner. But you're absolutely right. I could have said, you know what? We're going to do it at $200,000 and we'll split the profit. Anything over $200,000, 50-50. These deals are meant to be flexible depending on people's situation. And that still would have been a great deal for everybody involved, a win-win. And now the value to me was the fact I was using his skills, his talent, his money to bring it to that 250 because he was going to renovate the property, right? So I benefited right off the bat immediately. But we simply could have done it the other way too and done a 200 and done 50-50. By the way, most people naturally when they think about splitting things, where do we go to? 50-50. Doesn't have to be that, but you know, and when you're explaining these to people, you keep it very simple. Like, I won't pull out a calculator or anything like that with them. But I'll say to them, okay, I'm going to sell you, for instance, if it's a senior community, I'll sell you. You know they don't allow tenants anymore here. Oh, really? Here's what we can do. Your payment will really be the same as what you'd be renting it from me for. And I will sell you 5% of the house, and I will, at the end of 5 years, buy out your interest. What if we don't want to move? Not to worry. We'll have it right in there. You can renew every year for $1. Keep the same terms and up dollar, or maybe increase the payment, whatever you agree to. Again, flexibility. But I give them a $1 thing to update, to redo the deed every year. And even if I have to pay to record a new deed, is it worth it? Heck yeah. But the main thing too is who's staying in control of this whole deal? Me. You know, I learned years ago, I don't like having to answer to people. You know, I make corporate America, me will not get along, as Anthony can attest. So I'm in control of the deal. How many of you guys, when you go buy a house, are in the house in 5 minutes and already know if you're going to buy it? Right? And then the seller, the guy who you buy it from, looks at you and goes, I can't believe you're the one who bought it. So many people walking through going, oh, this is lovely. This is wonderful. Oh, yes, I love it. And they never make an offer. You came in, looked at it in 2 minutes, said, hi, okay, I'll get back to you. And then you bought the house. Because this is what we do for a living. We're not looking at it thinking, well, our furniture, we know roughly, well, somebody's furniture fit. Does the layout good? We already know something about the house because we've done some research and know if this would be a good candidate for us. Other questions? No questions? Wow, that's pretty good. Oh, yes.
How about questions? You can do this with sellers of multifamily as well.
Oh, absolutely. Can you do it multifamily? Sure. Find the fellow with the two family who has not gotten rent from somebody because of COVID for the last 2 years, and the government has allowed them not to pay and even encouraged them not to pay you. And now you're going to have one burned out landlord, and you were mentioning this last night about, do you do it with landlords? Say, exactly. Well, you have people who, they are motivated. Well, you're really looking for somebody who has a motivation. And a lot of times, these are not people who are financially, truly financially strapped, but it's killing them, in that example, that they're paying out $1,400 a month on a vacant property that they inherited, and they have really good jobs 500 miles away, and they now are just looking for somebody to solve their problem. And again, like I said, it might be where the young couple, the contractor, is not the equity partner. The person who lives far away, the owner of the house, becomes the equity partner. In that case, we may give an option to the person, the contractor, to move in there and tell them, give us $5,000 down, you do fix up, and we'll give you the right to buy it or at a certain price, and every year give them a long-term option, and every year maybe increase the price a little bit. Kind of doing the same thing, depending on what parties are involved and what they need. Any other questions? Yes?
So, your yearly interest only, is it just a 1099 interest?
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interest only. How do you show it? You have to report it as income to Uncle Sam. It's ordinary income. There's no, you know, write-off. Now, remember, though, I might be getting a write-off on this property. This one particular day I'm thinking of, I don't really remember what write-offs we take or what we don't. You know, we've been doing it for a few years now, so. But the accountant knows. Yes?
You said that you allow these to work
I am the worst person in the world for marketing. I'll tell you that right now. Every once in a while I get motivated and I'm going to do a mailing campaign. Or what I learned is just knocking on doors, talking to people. You know, and again, what I've learned is people think that the knocking on door means, hi, how you doing? Hey, do you want to sell a house? No, you just go talk to people. Hey, this is a really nice neighborhood. Do you know anybody who might be looking to sell? Or, well, Mary down the street just passed away, and her kids live in Peoria. Well, that's not too far from here. They live in California, and, you know, and the market's going down, so they're not sure what they're going to do. Voila. Now I want to contact Mary's kids. Just by talking to people and finding out. I mean, you guys have been in this business for a long time. You see some really strange things, right? And you run into situations, you go, I don't have to watch TV and I don't have to read fiction. I'm living it by what I watch people do. It really is true, but it's fun. It's fascinating. You know, if you're really a people person and interested in their situations, and that's what you have to show, you have an interest. If I'm looking at a foreclosure, first question I have for them is, what are you going to do? And I can't tell you how many times they'll say something to me like, nobody's asked me that. Like, do you have a place to live? What's your situation? Because if you can solve that, chances are good, you'll end up with the house. But if you just go in there and make, you know, send out a million offers, I find that doesn't work for me. Maybe it works for other people. I need to talk to folks and see what their situation is and try to say, okay, here's what we can do. Will that work for you? Yes, sir.
How did you come by this?
Learning from many people. This gentleman here is one of them. John Schaub, Jimmy Napier, Jack Miller. Listen to those guys and say, and turn, the key to me when you hear people like Pete is, okay, I can't do quite that in Jersey, but what can I extrapolate from what he taught me and then work it in Jersey? Same what I'm saying, keep it flexible. Like in Florida, you can say, you know what, I'm not renewing your lease, right? Not in New Jersey. I have to renew. Unless I, myself, or a family member is going to move in. So when he tells me, Dave, just raise the rent and tell me you got to get out. Won't work in New Jersey. Can't do it. So I have to figure out another way to get around that. So I learned from them. Equity sharing, there was a fellow by the name of Paul Simon. Many years ago, if you guys remember, he was on the Nashville Network. He was a good old country boy with the lines, the boots, the whole nine yards. He talked about equity sharing. And then there was another fellow years ago, I don't know whatever happened, Don Berman, I heard years ago. I don't know. He talked about equity share, and that kind of got me thinking, hey, you can do that. And you guys know Sonny Block? Okay. If you look in his book, the second book he wrote, he has an equity share chapter in there. One of my properties is the contract he used because his attorney is one of my partners, and he used his contract, and I opened the book, and there's my house in there. And I said, am I getting royalties? No, but if you ever want a great story, ask anybody who knows Sonny Block about Sonny Block. It's fascinating. You can't make it up. Okay, any other questions before we close up? Yes, sir.
So what if you had the kids who, you know, were in California, but they were currently renting?
I'm sorry.
What if they wanted to do a creative structure in exchange for their parents' house if they inherited?
Okay.
How would you handle that?
It's an equity. Do they want a piece of the action? Do they want it gone and never hear about it again? Are they willing to hold paper? What are the terms? Is there a subject to a mortgage that's really an attractive mortgage for me to take subject to? All depends on their situation. In other words, like Peter says, come up with at least five or six ways to buy a property. And then think about whether ones that most likely they would accept. Now what's good for you, you already know any of those six you came up with will work for you. What ones work for them? Which ones are they most likely to accept? And then as you talk more and more, it's not even hard and fast. Then you may start cutting and pasting and things like that. And then you come to an agreement. You know, a lot of times, like, we'll simplify this, right? But I mean, these negotiations might have gone on over several weeks to get it to where we need to structure something. Or they may at the last minute say, you know what? I decided I like to do it the other way better. Okay. And then you structure it accordingly. Anybody else? No. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming and listening. I hope you got something out of today. And again, if you have any questions, please join us on the 12th. And I'll be happy to help anybody any way I can. But thank you very much.